The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Get your official Adam Sank Show merchandise at adamsank.com. T-shirts, tank tops, mugs, masks, just about everything you can think of emblazoned with the Adam Sank Show logo. Go to adamsank.com to order your merch today. Thank you.
Warning. The program you're about to hear contains highly offensive and indecent material.
This is the Adam Sank Show.
If it's in my hand, I'm going to suck it.
Powered by DNR Studios. And now...
the one, the only, Adam Sank!
Bottom.
Bonjour tout le monde. Je m'appelle Adam. Et bienvenue au Adam Sank Show. We are not live, but this is a brand new episode if you're listening at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, Saturday, September 12th, 2020, at dnrstudios.com, the only place you can hear this podcast throughout the week that it first airs. If you listen elsewhere, please leave me your ratings and reviews on the audio platform of your choice. Email me, moi, at adam@adamsank.com. Like the Adam Sank Show Facebook page, all kinds of fun content on there. Download the comedy albums, and most importantly, get your official ass merch. T-shirts, tank tops, even a mask to protect you from the Trump virus. The link to all that is at adamsank.com. And no matter what else you do, answer the census and register to vote. I'm a little flustered, Tarek and JB, because I'm still reeling from last week's disaster. When we tried for 30 minutes to call somebody in Sussex, England, and were unsuccessful.
Same.
But it's a reset. It's a whole new world.
A whole new hole.
It's a new day. It's a new dawn. And I'm feeling free. Our guest today is Joey Scaldani, author of Basic Bitchin'. We'll be talking to him about all sorts of basic but delicious recipes that everyone should know how to cook. But first, it is my pleasure, my honor, my duty to welcome back to the studio today's guest co-host, Tarek Daniel.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad I'm back.
Tarek, the first time you were ever on the show, we mentioned that there is another Tarek Daniels who is also gay and black.
Yes.
Have you and he made contact yet?
Yes, we have, because a couple of times I got emails that he needed to get. So I emailed him and I said, hi, I'm Tarek Daniels. I think there's like a period in between our names and his Gmail. So I got a phone call. No, I got an email saying, oh, we're happy to have you as a guest tomorrow. And it was somewhere in Texas. And I go, I'm like, did I book something? And I was like, no, this is not me. And he was really nice. He was like, thank you so much. I'm like, yeah, I'm happy to forward anything that I get for you. I would love to meet. He's really cute.
I know.
Really cute. I
think he's your soulmate.
Would you date yourself?
I would definitely. He's like 10 years younger than me. I would
nothing
totally date
that.
Him. He's very, very, very cute and very smart, too.
It would be like that episode of Sex and the City where Sam Jones dates Sam Jones.
I know. Well, he might even pronounce his name like Tariq or something.
There's something happening with men in the ass.
Anyway, it's lovely to have you back. JB, always lovely to see you, our queen of fuckery, JB Bursey. Let's do a giveaway first. And I must say, by now, all five of these DVDs might already have been awarded. But just in case, I thought we would do the promotion one more time. Thank you for the music, JB. This is about the King of Staten Island, the Pete Davidson movie. We have five copies to give away on Blu-ray. The movie is from celebrated director Judd Apatow and SNL's Pete Davidson. This critically acclaimed heartfelt comedy, now available to own on digital Blu-ray and DVD, featuring over 2 hours of hilarious, never-before-seen bonus content, including alternate endings, deleted scenes, and a gag reel. The film is inspired by Pete Davidson's own true life story. Rolling Stone calls it an emotional and comic knockout about love, loss, and laughter on Staten Island. Great cast with Marissa Tomei and Bill Burr, Steve Buscemi. So here's how you can win one of these five Blu-ray copies. Listen, bitches. Step one, post a review of the ass to Apple Podcasts or any other streaming audio platform that accepts reviews. Two, email me a screenshot of your review at adam@adamsank.com. If you've already posted a review in the past, you can screenshot that and put that in the email. If you're a DNR Studio subscriber, you can still post a review to one of these other platforms. Or if you really want to be a bitch, you don't want to post a review anywhere, you can just send me a screenshot of your latest DNR Studio subscription receipt and you will be entered. Make sure, everyone, that you include your name and your mailing address so the Blu-ray can be shipped to you. The first five emails I receive will be the winners, provided you each follow the instructions properly. I know that Gail is already a winner. I look forward to the other emails pouring in. Once again, my email is adam@adamsank.com. Name, mailing address, screenshot of your review, or your latest DNR Studio subscription invoice. Good luck to everyone. Oh, this time I did it before the music ran out. I'm so happy.
Very good.
So I want to start this this show out with a question to both of you. And I know what JB's answer is, but let's start with Tariq. Do you feel that the standards of beauty and physical perfection are higher and stricter in the LGBTQ community than in the straight world?
Yes.
You do?
I do. I think we tend to be a lot more shallow and more into image and in my experience, what I've noticed, yes.
See, I think men in general are more shallow. I think men objectify their sexual partners and wannabe sexual partners and impose very rigid standards of what's beautiful. I don't think it's a gay thing because lesbians certainly don't do it. Lesbians have, they fall in love and are attracted to women who are not what society tells us are conventionally beautiful women all the time. I mean, some lesbians like, you know, supermodels, but most lesbians like women who just look real. And if I may speak for lesbians, and there are women who, you know, will tell you, straight women, I'm saying, that they don't really care that much about what a guy looks like. It's all about his personality, his warmth, his sense of humor, his, you know, his drive, his confidence, that kind of thing. I think men, as animals, we're so strict and rigid in what we find attractive. I don't think it's necessarily the fault of the gay community. JB, you say what?
Okay, so when I think gay community, I think guys, because again, this only falls on guys, because women don't care what you look like. I have straight guy friends who like dogs, but they always get a girlfriend.
Like actual dogs?
Yeah, like I wouldn't even date you. You have a horrible personality and you're kind of ugly in the face. Like I don't understand how
Shade.
You keep getting girlfriends. I don't understand how people keep liking you, but apparently women do.
Right.
So it's just you're right.
It's men.
It's just us guys.
And it's not all men.
And I agree with you, Adam. I see what you're saying in the sense that it's men. Maybe it's because I know more gay men that fall into this category of caring about looks more.
Look, speaking for myself, I need to be attracted to someone if I'm going to either have sex with them or date them or try to have a relationship with them. But I can find different things attractive about with many different kinds of men. In other words, I don't need a guy to check off 10 boxes for him to be attractive to me. You might be, you know, overweight.
Yeah.
You might be kind of craggy looking in the face. But if there's something sexy about you, if you have like a lot of confidence or you have a huge dick or just a really nice dick, you know, maybe you have like a beautiful ball sack. Like these are things that are important to me. And I don't need you to look, I don't look like a supermodel. I don't expect you to. The reason I bring this up, though, is because there was an interesting article in Gay Star News by a guy named Bradley Burkholz. This guy Burkholz has been sort of exploring the world of gay incels. An incel is someone who is involuntarily celibate, and there's sort of a community out there now of predominantly straight guys. But apparently some gay guys and trans guys are getting in on the act. And they're basically people who are very angry. They tend to be very angry about the fact that they cannot get laid. And they blame others for the fact that they can't get laid. In the case of the gay incels, they blame the gay community. for having these ridiculous standards of physical perfection.
I mean, I'm 50-50 on it, but okay.
What do you mean?
Like, okay, I blame the gay community, yes. But then I also blame myself because I listen to it. And I fall into it. That's why I get depressed. That's why I don't want to have sex. But then on days when I feel confident enough, I want to get sex. I know I have to try really fucking hard. I think that's the problem, is that we have to try really fucking hard. Rather, when some people are just like, hey, wink, sex, yeah, that's about it. Me, I go through hoops and I jump through hoops and claim $1 million prize and tell you that I'm fucking great at blowing you. Just
is that true?
That is true. I am great, but I don't want to do it unless I get my ass eaten, which is very rare. That
seems fair.
Which is very rare in its own. It's
But JB, I think also you're fishing in poison waters because you're meeting people on the apps.
That's also true. I also don't know how to meet people in face-to-face because I'm terrible in face-to-face conversation. I'm too shy. I can't deal.
You think you're too shy.
Oh, no, I know
we've had
I'm
this
too
argument
shy.
Before. You're actually really fun and outgoing and perfectly capable socially. You just – it doesn't feel that way to you. But on the outside, like, again, when I saw you on the Derek and Romaine boat cruise, like, I felt like you were the life of the party. I didn't think you had any trouble talking to people. I just think that's a lie you tell yourself.
I just know how I am in crowds. I always say this. I'm fun at parties. I'm not fun for a long-time friend. Because I know how to interact at parties because they only last for so long. So I know my time limit. I know how to be good. I know what to say and then to walk away.
Well, you don't always have to be the life of the party either. Like, you could just be a chill person. And I love hanging out with chill people. I don't need you to make me laugh.
I feel like I have
that's
to do
my
something.
Job.
Okay. Oh, no.
But that was coming. But I think being on the apps is a big part of it, JB. I'm on the apps a lot lately just because I'm so fucking bored. I don't meet anyone. I don't get people don't respond to me. I don't get messages back. I just think it's the environment is so impersonal and it's so easy to just ignore someone or block them or also people are on drugs. They're doing other things. They've got like a friend over. They're watching TV with, and they're like looking at their Grindr every hour or so, and they're just like scrolling through. It's not – people aren't focused
enough.
See,
but I am that guy. I only check my Grindr when I'm done playing video games. That's
exactly.
I just checked it because I'm interested in who's around. I don't really meet people. We chat.
Obviously, well, I look at my Grindr to find my ex. That's why I have a Grindr. That's terrible.
Here's what this guy Bradley Burkholz says about incels, and I agree with this. He says, I would argue that most gay and bi incels aren't actually involuntarily celibate. Instead, they are voicels. Or voicels, voluntarily celibate. That's because many incels are, by their own admission, only attracted to people they perceive as 10 out of 10. Of course, highly attractive people are more likely to repeatedly reject them. Meanwhile, a lot of gay cells are searching for love and sex on the likes of Grindr. So they're bound to face higher rates of rejection. Everyone faces rejection on Grindr. They'd be more likely to find romance if they used apps and dating opportunities that allowed their personality to shine through. Moreover, and this is exactly what I wanted to say, plenty of incels are conventionally attractive. But a lot of incel ideology is based on the fictional, frequently cruel world of our own imaginations. Meanwhile, incel forums online only serve to perpetuate our own worst insecurities. I agree 100%. Look, I have seen some of the ugliest people on earth getting laid.
Yep.
And more importantly, having long-term loving relationships. Yep. I would argue that I know more unattractive couples than attractive ones. It's not about you being unfuckable. It's about you having ridiculous standards.
Too persnickety.
That are too high. That's why I'm single. I think I'm fuckable, but my standards are really high of what I'm looking for in a boyfriend. There's a million reasons why I cancel people when I'm, you know, considering dating them or entering into a relationship. That's on me. That's not anyone else's fault. That is me.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think people need to take responsibility for their shit. And I'm sorry, but it doesn't matter what you look like, you can get laid. The Elephant Man got laid.
Yeah.
He did.
You get laid.
We were talking last episode about the eagle and the cock.
Fuck, what was his
You've
name?
Seen some scary trolls there, John Merrick.
I have seen some.
No. Okay, there's this black guy who's real ugly, and he had a show.
Bernie Mac?
No.
Flavor Flav?
Flavor Flav. Thank you. That's the
flavor of love.
Yeah. Well, that's different though, because he's famous and has money.
We have money. Yeah, and you're famous.
Rich, ugly people get laid all the time. But at those cruise bars, like if you really just want sex, you can go to your local Eagle or Cock or wherever your local sleazy place is, adult bookstore, and somebody will suck your dick. I promise you.
And I'm old fashioned that way. Like, I like meeting them in person.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
At the Cock.
At the Cock. The Cock does mean, yeah.
And the thing about these incels is the rage that they vent is scary. And a lot of them do become, not a lot of them, some of them do become mass shooters. That horrible guy, Elliot Rogers, who killed all those female college students out in I think it was Santa Barbara. You know, they work themselves up into this state where women are their enemy and women are evil for rejecting them. And meanwhile, like, Elliot Rogers was not a bad-looking guy. He was just a douche.
Yeah, well, his bitterness just took over and became evil. And
there were – okay, this doesn't sound wrong, but I remember working at 7-Eleven. This was a couple of years ago, and this was during my college time. And someone did do a mass shooting, and he posted a video. And I was like, in the video, like, he real cute. He's probably going after these extreme, shallow girls, and that's why he has heartbroken. Instead of him going for the nerdy bitch who's in his corner, who's like, you're fine, there's nothing wrong with you. But she got a bit of a cleft palate, she got a little acne, her hair a little messed up. But she's there for you.
Exactly.
Try that bitch.
She's loyal. And then
if you're a six, go for other sixes. There's no shame in that.
Yeah, you really need to know.
Know your lane.
Where you stand. Know your lane.
I get rejected all the time by guys that are hotter than me. And you know what? That makes sense. They should reject me.
Allow it. Yeah, it's acceptable.
Now, I will say, when I get rejected by someone less attractive, it is kind of infuriating.
Yeah, that's
or
like, what the
when
hell?
When I find out that somebody wouldn't fuck me, but then I find out that they fucked this total troll, I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, like, how dare you?
Really?
I feel that way about my neighbors having sex. I'm just like, how? I look at the grinder app. I say, oh, so you after that bitch right there. Her pussy's always open to everyone. Whatever. Whatever. But then I'm like, I gotta get over it. I gotta be mad. I'm happy for my neighbor. She get laid. Go get your coochie pound out.
But you know what, though? It's all subjective. Beauty subjective. Looks are subjective. And once again, your personality, your energy, your charm, your outlook, all of those go a really long way.
Really, the personality is a lot. And there's been many times when I've met somebody I liked and they had a boyfriend, so I couldn't get it. And then I'd meet the boyfriend and I'd be like, wait, I'm cuter than them. What?
Right.
And it really, and maybe they didn't think that one, they could not have agreed. And then maybe my personality just wasn't as great as their lovers.
Yeah, it's not a contest. It's really just about chemistry and what you're looking for and who you click with. And I will. The last thing I'll say about this, and I've talked about this with a lot of my friends, in New York City, I can't speak for other cities, in New York, the better looking a guy is, the more likely he is to be really fucked up.
Yes.
Like, you go to a club and you see those ridiculously hot muscle guys, they are addicted to every drug. They're miserable. They're lonely. They don't have any real friends. They may look like they're having the time of their life, and their Instagram account might look like paradise, but they are fucked up and miserable. Beauty does not make you happy.
No.
Just like money doesn't make you happy.
Facts.
You make you happy.
I mean, money makes me happy. Money makes me body.
Money helps a lot.
Money money for essentials makes you happy.
Right.
But there comes a point where once you have enough for your essentials, it doesn't matter how much more you have. If you have $1 million in the bank, I'm not saying any of us does, but if you do, it's not going to make you 10 times happier to have $10 million in the bank.
No, I learned that when I worked at Bergdorf Goodman, like, waiting on these rich people. And money definitely does not buy happiness, because a lot
Quite
of them
the
are
opposite.
Not happy.
Miserable.
Honestly, if I had that kind of money, I would buy an amusement park.
I would rather be rich.
And just ride the rides all day by
like,
yourself?
No, not like an Eric Cartman amusement park. Like, oh, this is all for me. No, I want this to be a great business, and I want to add more rides to it. Amusement park seems like my kind of fun job life thing, owning one.
Happiness.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I hope you realize your dream someday.
Right?
Meanwhile, a woman may have been cured of HIV without medical treatment. A patient who was first infected in 1992 may be the first person cured of the virus without a risky bone marrow transplant or even medications. In addition, 63 people in this study were able to control their infection without drugs, sequestering HIV in the body in such a way that it could not reproduce. So these people, they're not having anything done to them. They're just curing themselves of HIV. Their bodies are curing themselves in what scientists are calling a functional cure. This Wow. study appeared in the journal Nature, and it outlines a new mechanism by which the body may suppress HIV, which, you know, they can only tell that this is happening now because of advances in genetics, but they think this was always the case. They've always had these long-term non-progressors who have had HIV for decades, haven't been on meds, or maybe they have been, but either way, there's just been no progression of the virus or of any kind of illness. The study also offers hope that a small number of infected people who have taken antiretroviral therapy for many years may also be able to suppress the virus and just stop taking the drugs. One of the researchers says it does suggest that treatment itself can cure people, which goes against all previous scientific thinking. So there's nothing really new here. It's not a story about, hey, there's this new drug or this new treatment. It's just the way that certain people, their bodies are able to control this virus either on their own or with the help of antiretrovirals, which most people who are positive take anyway. And the more they understand about genetics, the more they're able to see who can do this and who can't do this and how it might be used as a practical treatment in the future for all people. Tark's just staring at me.
No, I just think it's amazing. I hope these people are willing to, you know, give all they can to be studied and figure out what is it in their body that makes them, how are they able to do this?
I heard at one time that, this was in the early days fairly early days of AIDS, that they thought that there were some people of European descent who were naturally able to control the HIV virus because their ancestors had survived bubonic plague.
That sounds racist, or, and like you guys are superior European.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't all Europeans. It was just the Europeans who had descended from people who didn't get sick during the plague. Because there were a number of plagues that went through Europe.
Yeah.
And
bubonic plague, black plague.
Yeah, that wiped out most of the population. Possible. And they think if your ancestors could withstand that, yeah, then you have the same genes that helped withstand HIV.
Haven't you white people been given enough?
I mean, it's not fair. Really, really not fair.
Thank you, Tarek, for saying that.
It's true. I mean, listen, we do know that HIV affects people of color in different ways than it affects white people. They are more likely to get sick and more likely to die. Some of that is about access to treatment and health insurance and things like that. And some of it is about how shitty the medical community treats people of color. I was just seeing a segment on that over the weekend that I think Bravo's been doing some very interesting discussions about race with their – why do you look like you're guffawing over there?
Because I'm remembering this meme. You know that song WAP by Cardi B?
Yeah, and, Wet Ass Pussy.
Yeah, and I saw this meme. It was like, I got this ring. I ain't cook, I ain't clean, but I got this ring. And it's this white woman. You wonder how I got it? It's white ass privilege. It's just her. Just smiling. I'm like, yo, this fits the topic.
No, but they had some of the stars of that show, Married to Medicine, on this Bravo discussion about race, and they were these black people were talking about experiences they've had with doctors, and it reminded me of you, JB, talking about this one time on the show that you hate doctors because they're always assholes to you.
Yeah, always assholes.
And that's just one thing that like white people never think of. We never think about it.
It's my own kind too.
No, yeah. When I went to get the antibody test, my best friend, he's white. He went in his Williamsburg neighborhood, and I went in Brooklyn, and I actually walked down closer to Bed-Stuy, and it was in a blacker neighborhood. And he had a line. He was there an hour. I walked right in. Black people don't trust doctors. And I told him this because I got to, and he was like, "Wait, you didn't have to wait a long time?" I'm like, "Who's in line?" And he's like, "Yeah, it's a whole bunch of honkies." And he's white, so he said that. And he said it was a bunch of white people waiting to get tested. And when I went in there, I didn't even have to wait. I was the only black person there. It's in a black neighborhood.
And the reason you all don't trust doctors is because doctors are shitty to you.
Yeah.
And they take our money. It is a whole white conspiracy.
They poisoned us. It's ingrained in us, and it's unfortunate, but yeah, it's how it is.
Even my mom, who worked in hospitals, like, unless you're dying, don't go to the hospital.
Yes, that's what they were saying. They're less likely to go because they don't want to be mistreated. They don't want to be shamed. They're often – when I go to the doctor, even if it's for like an STD, my doctor's never like, this is your fault. Like, yeah. You fucked up. Whereas these people of color were saying that that's a regular thing. No matter what they go in for, the doctor somehow makes
them
feel –
You have high blood pressure? That's your fault.
Right. Yeah.
You have diabetes? That's your fault. You got AIDS? That's your fault.
So that's just one more – part of this racial awakening that's happening right now. And you know, Bravo is a ridiculous, frivolous network that puts on all those stupid housewife shows. But I applaud them because I learned some shit that I didn't know and that I need to know about because it's, one of those things I never in a million years thought that my experience going to a doctor, any doctor, would be different than you guys' experiences.
And it's good that you're informed because you're one of the good whites.
Thank you. I try to be a good white.
You are good.
I really do.
I wouldn't do your show if you weren't.
Oh.
Well, maybe sweet. I would because I'm bored.
Because you're a fame whore. Oh my God. Well, speaking of problematic white people, Ellen's back in the news this week. So, you know, the Ellen DeGeneres show has been dragged to the mud and has had this this reckoning where two of its executive producers were fired.
Oh my God. Since the coronavirus started, Ellen's been getting dragged.
Yes.
Right. Oh my God.
But now she's on what's the word I'm looking for? She's trying to make things better.
Yeah, amends. She's trying.
She's trying to make amends. And the Ellen Show has implemented several new perks for its weary staff, including more paid time off and a liberal medical leave policy. Ellen addressed the staff recently. She was in tears. And apologized for the toxic environment. She said she apologized to employees for months of damaging reports and accused on-set toxicity that occurred on her watch. This is according to a source familiar with the this wasn't like a public video. This was just her addressing her staff on Zoom, although you know those bitches were recording it secretly mm-hmm. and selling it to TMZ. So I don't know if these perks are going to change anything.
I feel like the perks should have already been implemented before. I know, right? It didn't seem that you know. I always liked Ellen, but this is a lot.
It just seems like you're hiding something bad, girl.
Yeah, and it's just way too many people. I mean, I've met her at one of her parties once, and she was nice to me, but there was a lot of other celebrities there, so she had witnesses. I had witnesses.
There are witnesses in the audience, Your Honor.
But these perks, when I read the perks, I was like, well, they should already have that. Course. I want more, Ellen. Give them more.
Well, according to one individual who was witness to the meeting, the most meaningful gesture for the employees was just Ellen breaking her silence. I have said from day one that she was making a mistake by not addressing all of these accusations. Yeah. The insider said, quote, it was important to know what and how much she knew because many of us really believe in her. So Ellen is starting on the comeback train. Lady, what are you doing over there?
Digging for something
in the dirt.
Well, come back, Ellen. This just goes against everything we knew of her because she's always supposed to be so sweet and so loving and like nice. And
listen, nobody makes it to the top in this business without being a bitch.
Yeah, sometimes you got to be a bitch, but this went more than a bitch than I ever thought she could be.
I feel like we need to fix that. Unless you're a woman, you have to be a bitch to get to the top. If you're a white man, so much easier.
No, men are bitches too. I'm saying everybody. Male, female, whoever you are.
It's just not called a bitch when it's a man.
It's right. But no one like gets to the top by being like the nicest person ever. Yeah. Look at Donald fucking Trump. Ugh. He's the president of the United States. He's the worst human being ever. So unfortunately, in the world the way it is, these are the people who succeed. And nice guys really do finish last. At least that seems to have been the pattern. And you know, of course, there's always like those celebrities you hear about who are like lovely, wonderful people, but they don't tend to run their own show. You know, like the Ellen DeGeneres show, that is a machine.
Yeah.
Now, I do compare her, and I have compared her to Oprah.
Yeah.
Because you never heard this shit about Oprah.
No.
Oprah's staffers loved her and were very loyal to her, and she was extremely generous to them. But it could just be that Oprah's a better manager.
Yeah. Or a better person.
She could be a better person. Listen.
Because she's black.
Black people are better.
I have to take it
That's
back to race.
The moral of today's story. All
right. Hashtag black is back.
Where was it before? All right. So now we're going to do a cocktails and cock talk story. Hit it, JB. Oh.
And now, time for another stupid story from cocktails and cocktalk.com.
Yeah, suck my cock.
We haven't done one of these in a while, but you know I love a list, and this was a list of which Hollywood hunk has done the most nude scenes.
Oh.
I saw that.
Now, I have to say, we have to talk about the criteria of nude scenes, because a lot of these are just butt shots.
Oh.
To me, right. It's not a true nude scene unless you can see peen.
Anybody's going to show their butt. I want to see
exactly, and you don't even know if you're seeing the real butt. Sometimes they have butt doubles. But here
or
we go.
Like fake penises. There was a movie I was watching, and the main actress was a woman who had to play a man. And they made a beautiful fake penis for her. I was like, oh, look at this real life penis.
Yeah, that show on HBO Euphoria, or Dysphoria, rather.
Euphoria.
I think it's Dysphoria.
No, it's one of my favorite shows.
Really?
Oh,
with Zendaya?
Uh-huh, Euphoria.
Okay. There's some fake dicks in that show.
Well, you know they had the big scene where they showed like the most dicks ever seen on HBO.
Yeah. You think they were all real?
Those were supposed to be real. I think so, because... And did you see the scene?
Yeah, no. I saw it. Some of them looked fake to me.
I mean, perhaps, because I know at one point they wanted to do, like, I heard a rumor. They wanted to do 99 dicks, but then they made them cap it off at, like, 30-something.
Euphoria.
Yeah, I was wrong?
No,
it's one of my I'm obsessed with that show. I rewatched it. I'm sorry, sweetie.
It's good.
It's a great show. I love it.
All right, so here we go. Number 10, we're going backwards. Sylvester Stallone has done 13 nude scenes. He reveals butt, cock, and literally everything during some insane sex scenes in his first film, The Italian Stallion, which was like a softcore porn.
I didn't know this.
Yes, before Rocky. Number 9 is Tom Hardy, one of the sexiest men in the world.
So hot.
13 scenes as well. He stands out for delivering the most full frontal shots. Number 8, oh my God, this man could do anything to me. Alexander Skarsgård, 13 scenes. Check out the 6'4" tall the 6'4" Swede's ass and penis in True Blood.
I did.
Number 7 is Mark Ruffalo with 13 scenes. America's Dad loves showing off his insanely sexy, hairy body. Number 6 is Jake Gyllenhaal, again with 13. What else is there left to say about this incredibly handsome hunk who bears it all in Jarhead? He did look fucking good in Jarhead.
So I've waited on him once. He's so beautiful.
Woof.
So sweet, too.
Rumor to be gay.
So my man's face.
He, like, it makes great eye contact. God.
I hope him and the other guy's going out, but I doubt it.
Who's the other guy?
The new Spider-Man. Oh, I forgot his name.
I cannot keep track of the Spider-Men.
There's too many of them.
Number 5 is Kevin Bacon with 15 scenes. He's got over 4 decades of nudity and 6 degrees. By the way, Kevin Bacon was nude after a shower scene in the movie Wild Things.
Sure?
Number 4 was Javier Bardem, has done 17 nude scenes.
That's a lot.
Cocktails and Cock Talk says every single one of them is worth your while. Antonio Banderas comes in at number 3 with 17 nude scenes, including revealing his huge uncut penis in the movie False Eyelash when he was only 22.
I'm going to Google that later. I don't remember it.
It didn't look so huge to me, I have to tell you.
They're being a little dramatic.
Number 20 was a surprise to me. With 20 nude scenes, it's Marlon Wayans.
Yeah, that was surprising me too, because I don't think we've seen his penis, though.
No, but they say we love his...
Oh, no, he does a lot of butt shots in his comedy movies.
And it's a beautiful body.
They say we love his muscular butt, which we've peeped several times. But what amazes me about this, because I thought, fucking 20 times has Marlon Wayans been in 20 movies?
Yeah, I don't...
I looked up his filmography. He's been in like 50 movies.
Wow. I just remember Requiem for a Dream of his of seeing his body naked. But I don't remember... And then one comedy movie, but that's
just
two. I think
Scary Movie I saw.
Oh.
But Tom Holland. That was the man's name. Tom Holland and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, there you go.
That hot man.
But if Marlon Wayans has done 50 movies and 20 of them he's nude in, that's a pretty high percentage.
Well,
must like to show off his ass.
Yes.
It's a great ass.
He knows he has a wonderful body for an older gentleman.
And the number one actor who has shown his naked body on screen the most is Ewan McGregor.
Yes.
Not a surprise to me.
No.
He's got 25 naked scenes. He's the nudist male celebrity on the planet. He was Hollywood's notable schlong before Michael Fassbender came along in the movie Shame. I've seen Ewan McGregor's penis a lot. It's nothing to write home about, but...
Well, he's uncut, right?
Yes. That's which is not my favorite.
Exactly. That's why you don't like it.
E-W-A-N, brother?
You don't E-W-A-N.
I thought it looked good, but it's not a wreck, so it's just...
Listen, I wouldn't kick him out of bed. He's a beautiful,
you would make an exception for him,
yes,
with that uncut.
Absolutely.
Uncut, even though it goes against...
And everything that Adam believes in, yes. Yeah.
He's very... Whatchamacallit? He's very talented. He has a beautiful singing voice. He sang in Moulin Rouge and in Across the Universe, and he was fantastic in both.
Yes, he was.
All right, I'm starting to panic because I cannot find my interview. Here we go. All right, time for this week's guest segment, and our guest this week is a comedian, TV and radio personality, and the editor-at-large for CBS Interactive's Chowhound. He has just published a new cookbook entitled Basic Bitchin', 100 plus everyday recipes from nacho average nachos to gossip worthy Sunday pancakes for the basic bitch in your life. That's the entire title of the cookbook, Tark. So joining us now, all the way from New York City, please give a warm ass welcome to Joey Scaldani. Hit the applause, JB. Yes, Joey can hear us.
Now I can. How's it going?
We're good, baby. Thanks for coming on. I understand that you're a DNR Studios regular.
I am. I've been around the block quite a few times.
I've heard that about you.
Yeah, right?
Thank
no,
you.
No, yeah. You know, I've done Derek and Romaine's show years ago, and then Taylor Strucker's show pretty much every Thursday, so yeah.
And I apparently you and I met on the Derek and Romaine show many years ago, but I have no memory of it.
Yeah, I have a bone to pick with you, clearly.
Oh, no.
I feel terrible. But in my defense, I used to do that show a lot, and there's also giant portions of my memory that have been erased by years of ecstasy use. So.
Oh, is that the excuse you're using today?
It is. Because who could forget you, Joey, really?
Legit. No, it's fine. I used to just, I think, what was I doing with Derek and Romaine? It was like gossip segments, and it was honestly just unnecessary information about Lindsay Lohan and Paris Hilton at the time, I'm sure. And Perfect. It probably went through one ear and not the other.
So. Yeah, I was probably on Grindr. Joey, I feel like you wrote this book, Basic Bitchin', for me, because I am a basic bitch. I love to cook. And I love cooking delicious basic recipes. Like, I love to make chili. I love to make ziti. Just like basic things that are hearty and delicious. What inspired you to write Basic Bitchin'?
Yeah, you know, so when I transitioned into food editorial, I was a little angry, not angry, but more upset at the fact that there were so many cookbooks that were more aspirational over inspirational. And I feel like the majority of people, I would say majority of Americans specifically, you know, they just want these no-frills, easy recipes that, you know, are presented to them in a way that isn't going to be intimidating or complicated. And I always say I'm a professional eater, not a professional chef. So I wanted to have that tone going into it. And that's kind of where I got the inspiration. I wanted something that was self-deprecating. You know, I still chop garlic like I'm wearing Sally's press-on nails. I am by no means Ina Garten. And I wanted that type of approachable cookbook that anyone could, you know, mess up cooking along the way and laugh at, and not be afraid to get their hands dirty with, while in the kitchen. So.
Right. Because I think a lot of people would like to cook for themselves, but they're afraid to. They think that there's some mystery to it. It's too difficult for them. It's not going to come out good. I think a cookbook like this can reassure people that they don't have to be gourmet chefs to make something delicious.
100%. You hit the nail on the head. And, you know, that's why I wanted to make it super easy. You know, I start the book with a whole pantry section, a whole kitchen tool section. I even have sections along the way called Just the Tips, where, you know, I break down, you know, substitutions, why we use specific ingredients. I wanted it to be almost idiot-proof.
And I love that you're telling people what to stock their pantry with, because I can't tell you how many times I go over to someone's house, or let's say I'm staying at a share house on Fire Island, and I open the cabinet and there's no garlic powder. There's no paprika. There's no cinnamon. Like, these are basic things that you must have in your kitchen.
Totally. A lot of people don't realize that, and they will buy a cookbook and assume that they just have everything already. Or it's the other way around. They literally have nothing. So this is my way of saying, these are some staples that should have a permanent spot in your pantry.
What are your favorite recipes in the book?
Oh my gosh. This is like Sophie's Choice. I would say my chocolate chip cookies. I know they're so simple, but they are unbelievable. And I would say they're the most popular recipe in the book. I have like hundreds of pictures of people making them in their own kitchen, which is really cool. But they're just big, fluffy, gooey. They have a salt element to them. I live for those cookies. I'm literally popping a boner right now as I talk about them. I would say, like, savory wise, I'm a huge fan. Actually, you said you love chili. Funny enough, I have a polar vortex chili, is what we call it, where it's vegan. And I'm obviously a fan of meat, and to remove the meat element of chili was really startling for me at first. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to like this. But it's a chipotle sweet potato-based chili that I can't get enough of. And I almost serve it as a side dish sometimes because it's just so vegetable-heavy. And that's one of my favorites that comes to mind.
Well, speaking of vegans, I am a vegan.
Oh, perfect for you.
And by the way, my chili is fucking amazing. All you need is Beyond Beef or Gardein crumbles, and you can make it exactly as you would a regular chili. But I went right to your index, and I looked at your vegan recipes, and you have one called A Vegan's Favorite Vegan Lasagna. And here's what you write about this recipe.
Oh, no, here we go.
The best part of it is that it's vegan, which means you get to talk about being vegan for hours on end, just like every other vegan you know.
Shade.
It's true.
I feel very attacked.
I wanted to attack you because it's like, with vegans, it's like, oh, like that girl who like gets her septum pierced and you have to hear about it like 30 times in a row. Like, listen, I love a vegan because I wish I could be vegan, because I think when it comes to animal products, not just for the health reasons alone, but I think there's a morality thing for me. Like, animals are sentient beings. I don't like the idea of killing something that has the same intelligence level as a dog. You know, that freaks me out. Pigs are smarter than like toddlers. I obviously wanted to just play into the joke where, you know, vegans love to remind everyone that they're vegan, and they're very, I'm sure as you do every day.
Joey.
There we go.
We just lost you for one
second. Can you repeat that?
Yeah. We lost the last thing you said.
Oh shit. Sorry about that.
What do vegans like to do every day?
So what vegans like to do every day is just remind us that they're vegan.
So that's bullshit. Like, so here's what really happens, Joey.
Just reminded me you were vegan.
When someone finds out that I'm vegan, they ask me a million fucking questions, which makes me talk about it. But if they just went, oh, and then moved on to another topic, then I don't want to talk about it. I will say this, just so people know, every single recipe in your book, I can make vegan.
Yeah.
It only requires one or two substitutions. So it's not like a whole new way of cooking or a new way of thinking about food. It's just like, oh, it calls for ground beef, use Beyond Beef. It calls for chicken, use soy curls or seitan. So I love cookbooks, even non-vegan cookbooks like yours, because I just put my own spin on it. I will say, though, Joey.
Yeah. No, here we go.
You left out one of my favorite basic bitch recipes.
What?
Meatloaf.
I have meatloaf, so you're lying. I have bacon wrapped mini meatloaves.
come on, that is hardly meatloaf.
That is a meatloaf. I don't know what you're talking about. They're mini ones. Maybe you're used to a larger.
I like a large loaf.
You like pinching loaves. Like, let's be honest.
Fat loaf, yes. No, I scoured the index for meatloaf and couldn't find it. Maybe because I skipped the bacon section.
You know what? It's actually, that's probably what it was. It's actually a very, I want to say, not sentimental recipe, but it's called my bully-proof meatloaf. And I somehow equated it, or I tied it to stories of me being bullied as a kid. And I don't know how. I do this shit in this book all the time. Like, my avocado toast, for example, somehow has to do with gospel music. but I tell a really good story about, like, how these, like, loser kids used to make fun of me, and now I have the last laugh because I have a cookbook. So that's part of the meatloaf recipe. But yeah, of course I have a meatloaf in there.
All right, so I don't have the book in front of me. What goes into your, other than bacon, what goes into that meatloaf?
I mean, it's pretty standard. It's your meat, your ketchup. I want to say I didn't take any creative liberties on that because I think with meatloaf, people expect, like, almost cafeteria style meatloaf from like, you know, middle school. But I do throw in, like, a shallot, you know, some extra garlic. I do love a little, like, pecorino romano cheese and panko breadcrumbs, you know, instead of Italian breadcrumbs. But
so here's my secret.
Yeah. What's your secret?
Instead of any breadcrumbs, you use a half a cup of Quaker oats.
Oh, she likes her fiber. Okay.
Yes. It's healthy, and it really makes it whole. It makes it stick together, and it's delicious. And But enough about meatloaf. How many of these recipes have you actually cooked yourself?
All of them.
Really? Is that part of writing a cookbook? You have to test everything?
100%. But I will say, I went into this cookbook, again, not having any formal culinary experience. So I did work with a recipe developer, because what I had to tell her was, okay, when I make this meatloaf, for example, I kind of just do, like, two shakes, you know, of, Worcestershire sauce. And she's like, okay, well, that's really a teaspoon.
Yeah.
So she kind of helped me streamline those measurements. And you have to make everything.
Was it like a Julie and Julia thing where you were literally just cooking every single day for a year and a half?
No, because that's the thing. It's like, because these recipes are so simple and so basic, I kind of had them all in my arsenal. It was more just about making them, like, I guess, like, approachable, you know, for the everyday person, and to give those measurements, which I didn't have before. You know, a lot of it was just me eyeballing things and me making things when I'm drunk 3 a.m, coming back from the club and being like, oh, yeah, those nachos, you know, are the best, and I'm going to, you know, top them with this and that. And she's like, okay, well, you can't just say top them with this in a cookbook. You need to say half a cup of this, quarter cup of this. So I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm the same as you.
It's more about the math.
I eyeball things. And also, I tend to take a recipe, and not only do I make it vegan, but I always change it. I'm always like, this says a tablespoon of salt, but that seems like too much to me, so I'm going to do, like, half of that. You know, like, I just kind of, because you can always fix it later.
Yeah, and I had to make my recipes, some of them, a little bit more mainstream. Like, I love complexities of flavors. I love spice. And, you know, even for the chili, for example, I wanted to put in, like, damn, like, 2 teaspoons of cayenne pepper. And they were like, how about not? Because you're going to murder the people who buy this. but I was like, I kind of had to look at it from, like, a mass market approach. And I'm like, what is a typical American like? What do they not like? So that was, like, the process, honestly, the recipe development process. But it was a little bit easier for me because, again, these recipes are so simple, and I wanted to keep them that way. And I kind of came into this process, like, having made nearly all of them.
That's impressive. And I noticed that nearly half the book is cocktail recipes.
You better believe it.
Is drinking a lot essential to being a basic bitch?
100%. Because when you, like, hate the world around you, you need to drown your sorrows in a lot of alcohol. You know, a basic, like, turn it up a little bit. And I just, I think basics love to drink. And a lot of the time it's because basics, there's so much just self-hatred with who you are and how you're void of culture and fun things, that you're like, I'm just going to drink and pretend like I'm a more fun person.
So really, this is a book for losers and alcoholics.
Yes, which is why it needs to be a New York Times bestseller, because that's all this country is full of right now, is losers and alcoholics.
That's right. Well, according to Trump, no. That includes all military vets.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. No, but I mean, that's what I wanted to joke about with this book, is like, there is a basic bitch in all of us, you know? And I think...
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, there are always, obviously these stereotypes of, you know, the vapid white sorority girl, and those exist for a reason, but anybody likes just the comforts of these super simple recipes. And who doesn't like to walk around Central Park on a fall day with a Burberry scarf holding a pumpkin spice latte? I'm sorry, that's just something we all love.
Yeah.
Makes me feel good.
What's your favorite cocktail in the book?
My dad's mojito, which I call the Jojito, because it's, you know, I grew up in Florida, I know, sorry. And we had a lime tree in the backyard. So my dad's all about, you know, muddling those flavors. And it was just like a weekend drink, you know, that it was always looking forward to my dad making like the simple syrup and sitting by the pool and having a mojito. So
that's sweet.
Very homosexual too. But
yeah.
Mojito, I feel like it's a very homo drink.
It's kind of gay for a dad. My father was always all about Tanqueray and tonic in the summer and just scotch on the rocks in the winter. So
there you go.
Mojito would have been fancy. All right, Joey, in the time remaining, it's time to play everyone's favorite at-home quiz show, Ask Me No Questions.
Ask Me No Questions.
Ask Me No Questions.
Yeah. Which kind of cooking oil makes the best lube?
Ooh, are these rapid fire, or can I give like an extended response?
No, please, elaborate.
What oil makes the best lube? Oh my gosh. You know what? I would want like, okay, if it's like a short-term situation and my mouth is going near it, I want like a toasted sesame oil. Because you've got that nice depth of flavor. But I would not want that to linger for too long. So I would say a good olive oil to like just go back to my Italian roots.
I'm sorry, but the correct answer is coconut oil.
Yes.
I thought this was a personal question. Well, I didn't know this is like actual. Like,
no, it is. These are personal questions, but this one actually has a correct answer, which you got wrong.
Yes.
It's coconut oil.
Well, I would have said coconut because it's good for your skin.
And delicious. You can totally blow someone after jerking them off with coconut oil, and it tastes good, and it's good for your pores.
Done it.
You also put coconut oil in your hair too.
Yeah, no. Someone just recently introduced me to coconut oil in a sexual way, and I was like, "Oh my god, you can jerk off with this, and it never dries, and it's all natural." And,
dry people love them from coconut oil, yo. Yeah, we use it for our skin, our hair. It's everyday use.
All over my body.
Yeah. Who knew? Okay.
If someone,
Joey, that was the voice of our producer, JB, who you know well.
Huh?
JB, I love JB.
JB eats,
I miss you.
JB eats bacon.
I miss you.
All right, everyone shut up.
Wow.
JB eats bacon, egg, cheese, and ketchup on a raisin bagel. What is your reaction to that?
Gag, vom, disgusting.
Oh, no.
But I'm also like... whatever floats your boat. Like, if it tastes good, go for it. You know, it's not something I'm gonna fucking eat, but if you love it and it makes you happy, God bless.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Like, veganism aside, I can accept it up until you get to the ketchup. The combination of ketchup and raisins really makes me want to hurl.
Sorry.
I mean, yeah.
Next question, Joey. Have you ever fucked a pie?
No, but I would love to.
As in American pie.
The best of both that sounds like the best of both worlds, because you just like, you get to eat it after, but it'd be a little too messy. I'd fuck a cherry pie. I'm always down for a cherry pie.
Now, if you were to fuck a pie, how deep would the pie plate have to be in order for you to fit all the way in?
Well, I'm no size queen, but if I'm speaking for myself, I just see like one of those Ettenman's mini pies. No, I'm kidding. It'd be a deep dish, let's just say that.
Nice. Delicious.
Pretty standard.
Delicious. If you could only eat one food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
French fries.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I have an endless pit in my stomach when I'm eating fries, but I'd have to be allowed a condiment, and it would most likely be honey mustard because I have to dip.
I do like honey mustard. What's your favorite kind of fry? Like in terms of there's curly fries, crinkle fries. Yes. What do you like?
Oh my God. I just had an event with William Sonoma last night, and this was asked in the chat because everyone knows I hate shoestring fries. Like if you are a skinny fry that I can't dip and I have to pick up like 20,000 of you, it's not happening. As a fry connoisseur, I love like a good waffle fry. I love a steak fry. I love a McDonald's French fry. I love a curly fry. I love all fries except shoestring.
I think my favorite, I mean, I do love a curly fry, but also sweet potato fries, which I made myself yesterday, and they were soggy as fuck, but delicious.
All right. Yeah. I mean, sometimes a soggy fry is good.
Well, I don't have an air fryer, and I tried to do it in the oven, and there's just no good way to get crispy fries in the oven.
Mm. No, there gotcha. Really isn't.
Yeah.
At least not that I know of. Maybe. Do you have a fry recipe in the book?
Yeah, I do. I would say the key is, well, sweet potatoes actually are a little bit mushier. I think it's because of the higher sugar content.
Yeah.
But yeah, you just got to make sure the bad boys are like super dry before they're going in and just do a light coating of oil. Because a lot of people will douse it in an olive oil. And if they're super wet, you're not going to get something crispy. You're going to get mush.
Well, I was supposed to sprinkle them with cornstarch, but I didn't have any cornstarch. So that could have been part of it too.
That's a trick too. Because yeah, it'll absorb some of that moisture. But sometimes I feel like cornstarch will dry them out a little bit too much. I almost like putting cornmeal sometimes on potatoes or when you're making fries or potato wedges in the oven. Anything to just sop up a little bit of that excess moisture.
Interesting. I'll have to get some cornmeal. Yeah. Now, if you could only have one sex act for the rest of your life, what would it be? And you can't just say oral. It has to be specific.
Wait, no, because but JB knows this because I've said this for years. Like I do not love anal sex. So it'd be very, I'm like, I love oral, but I would say like rimming.
Oh, you don't like anal sex, but you love to lick ass.
Yeah. Listen, my job in life is to use my tongue. So I feel like my tongue is an expert in anything that it's required to do.
So you would, okay. So if the choice were you could only eat ass for the rest of your life, or you could only get your ass eaten for the rest of your life, you're saying you'd pick
That's
eating.
Hard. That's hard because I love to sit on a face because I have a big old booty and it's fun to just smother people. I don't know. It'd have to be like a role reversal situation where I'm allowed both.
You would get along great with my regular co-host, Ryan. He's a huge fan of ass eating. And I think he likes to eat more than he likes to get eaten. So
yeah, is he single?
He is not single. But Tarek just raised his hand. Tarek, you like eating ass more than anything?
Yeah, I do. And I really enjoy eating ass a lot.
I don't get what's fun about it.
I didn't like it until after I turned 30 and my mouth and tongue were just, I'm into it.
It's a great thing. It's a great thing.
I mean, I'm not against it.
I love it.
I love it.
Mm. It's like it's the last thing on the menu that I'm going to order, you know? It's so
I had
much
an ex where I could get him off the literally in 5 minutes doing it because I knew the exact spot and technique. So I think I'm a little bit cocky about it now.
We'll have to have you on the show in person and you can do a live demo.
I'm going to actually like probably need an ass. I don't think I could just show it.
Listen, all three of us have nice asses. So
yeah.
As soon as this COVID is over, we're going to have you in and we'll do it. I'm sure Derek and Romaine would love that. Okay. Is there, Joey, anything you won't eat? We know you'll eat ass.
Ooh. I will eat ass. I won't eat ass that hasn't been showered immediately. But
good choice.
I am open to trying anything, honestly, other than like dog meat, you know, stuff like that like would really freak me out. But the only foods I genuinely don't like, I'm not a ginormous fan of just tomatoes. Like I'll never put like a tomato slice on a burger. That to me sounds awful.
Interesting.
I don't love black licorice, but I love fennel. I love anise seeds. So that's a weird one. And then I would say lastly, the most awful things in the entire world, and I'll never get a Jelly Belly sponsorship out of this, they're buttered popcorn flavored jelly beans, I will projectile vomit if anything of that sort slips into a bag.
That's
candy.
Very specific. What is the best bottled syrup on the market? And don't say Aunt Jemima or you'll be racist.
Oh my gosh, I know. I like the Run Amok syrups. They, I think it's called Run Amok. They do a lot of infusions. They have a ginger one that is banging. It's just got that nice spiciness to it, but obviously countering the.
Gotta run. Joey Scaldini, your cookbook is called Basic Bitchin', on sale now wherever books are sold. How can people follow you on the interwebs?
You can just follow me at Joey Scaldini.
Thank you so much for being on. Tarik and JB, plug yourselves.
Yes, I'm Tarik Daniels, T-A-R-I-K Daniels, on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, Tarik78.
On Instagram, StockingAnarchy12.
I love you both. Thanks for being here. Ryan will be back next week. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast at dnrstudios.com. Order your ass merch at adamsank.com. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at adamsank. Email me at adam@adamsank.com. Bye.
Bye.